What stood out so far in spring? We've each got three. Because the algorithm says that that's the number baseball fans are most likely to click on.
You're listening to the Selfie Is Godcast with Zach Meisel and TJ Zuppi.
Fly ball, deep right field. Back is Spencer at the line, and trying to get the ball.
Subscribe to Selfie Is Godcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Unbelievable.
Zach, I don't mean to pick on our friend Anthony Castrovins. So I'll put that out there right now. You know better than anybody, when a player gives you something that's even remotely different, you're going to write about it. But for Shane Bieber, he's been working on his changeup, I think. This is the 57th consecutive spring training in which Shane Bieber has been doing it. And Anthony wrote about it because he talked about it after the game. And so I don't blame Anthony for writing about it, but I go back, this is like a tradition, like any other, unlike any other. The Bieber change-up spring training conversation continues. So I'm happy that we can keep that rolling and that it hasn't changed. He's still focused on that change-up.
You know, it's funny. We had a staff meeting this week, and someone was mentioning they were in White Sox camp and talking to Dylan Cease about trying to pick up a splitter. He said he toyed around with it over the winter and just didn't click. And so I blurted out, what if we did a story on that? What if we did a story on all the pitches these aces tried to throw and couldn't? And the first thing that came to mind when I was saying that was Bieber and the changeup, because even he would joke that, like, yep, another off season where I spent 3 months just fine-tuning this changeup that I'm going to throw 4% of the time.
I even laughed at the quote that he used in the story. My changeup is definitely not my strong suit. I know, Shane. He said that for every offseason. That would be fascinating, though. The one pitch that escaped all of these talented pitchers that they couldn't figure it out.
And then you start imagining, you know, what if Pedro Martinez did throw a gyro ball, like any, I feel like he could throw anything and it would be elite.
Yeah.
Or like, did someone try to pick up a knuckleball at some point and thought maybe for a minute it would add an element to their arsenal and then ditched it? That would be fun. Imagine like Garrett Cole with a knuckleball.
It's so weird to me because you hear those stories and we've seen it firsthand in the bullpen in Cleveland. Hey, here's how I throw the splitter. And then they discover it and it unlocks something, right? And it was just as simple as, here's how I hold it. And they threw it and it worked. What makes that so simple it works? And that Bieber has been working on this probably like going on 6 years now, because I think I wrote that story back in 2018 in spring training that he was working on the changeup. I was taking pictures of how he was holding the grip. What makes it so a pitcher can hand another pitcher a ball and say, here's how I throw it. And they throw it and it works. And yet somebody can focus on something so much like Bieber has with the changeup, and it still is not to where he wants it, and to the point where he feels comfortable to throw it more than a couple of percentage in a certain game.
Well, it's all biomechanics. It's how your body moves. And, you know, the other thing is, how does it play with the rest of your pitches? You know, you have to have that intent where there's a lot of chatter about pitchers wanting to pick up a splitter. And the main reason more guys want to do that is because the fastball's going up, you're throwing high fastballs, and the splitter looks like a fastball until the last second and then dives. So to be able to hit that high fastball, you're swinging up, okay, like the launch angle revolution and everything. Well, if you're swinging up, you're going to be swinging over that splitter that looks like the fastball. So you're seeing more and more guys throw splitters. People proclaim this is going to be the year of the splitter. So how does the changeup fit in Bieber's arsenal? And Bieber's arsenal has changed from year to year. It used to be fastball and curveball. That was his bread and butter. And then he went to more of a cutter slider mix the last couple of years. So is there a way that changeup fits one profile better than the other? The crazy thing is I remember talking to Matt Blake in like 20, 19 about the evolution of Bieber's arsenal over the years. And the changeup was something that they asked him to develop when he was in Double A, because he was just breezing through the minors and Double A was a piece of cake for him. And he even said at first, like, why do I need this? These hitters can't touch me. I'm just painting the corners with my fastball and my slider. And they said, when you get to the majors, if you do have a changeup, like, that could pay such dividends for you. And you're not always going to be able to just paint the corners with these pitches in the majors. So that's when he started working on it. And it's just, it is wild. It's 2024. You know, he's entering a contract year and it's still a work in progress.
Could it be he's so much of a perfectionist that it's actually a good pitch? But, man, when I let go, it just doesn't feel right. It just doesn't feel right. It's not quite doing what I want. Even if he just committed to throwing it, maybe it'd be fine. I mean, I can't imagine you're a guy that is as talented as him and as smart as him. It has to be a decent pitch, but maybe he just doesn't feel the confidence when he throws it that it's going to perform the way that he wants.
And that's the thing, is how do you get to that point where you can throw it with conviction and not have any hesitations? That's got to be like the toughest step in that process, because if you're not confident in it, it's not going to do what you want it to do. And, you know, we talked last week about Bieber in 2020 and the curveball, where he knew he was throwing the curveball. The hitter knew he was throwing a curveball. And because he threw it with such conviction off of the fastball, that thing's bouncing in the dirt and guys are still swinging at it. So I don't know how you get to that point. I don't know how, because there's such a difference in that. You can feel great in December after being in the lab designing the pitch and choosing your grip and throwing it to a catcher. But when you get on the mound, even in a spring training game and you're working on things, you get on the mound in April with fans in the stands, with statistics that count. That's
and you can't feel your fingertips. Yeah. It's freezing cold. Can't quite grip it the way that you were in spring training, sure. But I empathize here, because I think we've all been in this position before. I know you've been in this position before in writing. When you're writing something and you're pretty close to the end and you want somebody else to read it, but you always give them the caveat that I'm still working on this, or oh, I can't quite get that figured out. Even if you thought maybe you were close to being done, you would still lay out all of those things first and say, I'm not done yet. Please understand that it might be clunky here. And if the reader were to just read through that, they probably wouldn't even notice any of that. But it's just, you give them that because you're self-conscious about it. You're not sure if that's ready for the spotlight. And anybody in any job, in any project, if you want somebody else to look it over as you're working through it, you always give them those little, well, it's not quite done yet. Like a music producer. Well, I'm not quite sure about this mix, and I'm not sure where the drums fit in here, but just listen to this song and let me know. And if you're consuming it, you would never even pay attention to that. You'd just be so immersed in the entire song. And it has to be the same for anybody that's working on anything in spring training. And thankfully, we've come a long way. We don't just look at the stat line in spring training and think, well, this guy's in for a big year, because he's hitting 500 so far in spring training. We try to look a little bit below the surface. The unfortunate thing, though, is when it's March 8th as we're recording this, you still don't have a lot to go on. And as we go through this exercise today, I realize we're probably going to make some silly points, things that we're going to look back on in 6 weeks and think, why did we let anything that happened in spring training dictate how we felt about how the season was going to unfold? But as I said with Anthony Kastrovitz, you deal with what you got. In this case, the first couple of weeks of spring training, that's what we've got. So I've got three. I know you've got three.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I don't really look at stats. It's cool what Angel Martinez's OPS is, but I really don't look at the stats page at all. I think you can trick your brain into thinking some things that maybe don't exist. So with that said, let's talk about six players who have great stats this spring.
Have we done it? Have we did the thing where we say, now please understand that we know that these players, what they're doing in spring training is not indicative of how they're going to perform. Have we laid out all the caveats first to make sure we're not weeks from now looking back on ourselves as idiotic.
I do have one quick aside. This has nothing to do with anything, but I did confirm with the sources, the powers that be, Ben Lively is out of options.
It was a big conversation.
Do with that information what you wish.
Big conversation in our Discord. Yeah, we had talked about that because on the show we mentioned he has one because on Fangraphs it's still listed in the depth charts that he still has one. But someone had raised that concern in the Discord. We looked it up and a couple of other places said he did not have any. Someone had gone through and looked at the number of times he was optioned and figured that he didn't have any options remaining. And then you confirm it. So no options remaining. Does that do anything for his standing on the roster, do you think?
It's such a weird signing, and it's weird that it happened so quickly in the offseason. Tells you they like him. They've, you know, Vogt has had glowing things to say about him, especially with the injuries. I mean, I think he's just going to be in the bullpen as a multi-inning guy to start the season, and there's good reason for that. You know, you want to be careful with those starting pitchers. It probably benefits you if you don't have Williams and Bybee throwing 110 pitches in April because you need them to get through the full season. You got two guys coming off injuries. So it makes sense. I don't know enough about him. I don't know if he's good, but makes sense. You got a long guy you can lean on and you're paying him and he's out of options. So you kind of backed yourself into a corner anyway.
Well, we probably shouldn't be spending any more time on Ben Lively than we have, but thank you for clarifying.
Sorry, was
that.
He one of your three standouts?
I'm going to cross it off. I think I've got another one here. I'm going to quickly jot that one down. First one. No, I'll save that one. First one is Tyler Freeman. This one is obvious, but it goes beyond just the fact that he's swung the bat all right so far. It's looking at how are the teams treating the players in spring training. There are a couple of different things you can read into it. Sometimes you can read into which group a guy is playing with. If they're playing with the A lineup, sometimes you can read into that. Not always, but sometimes you can. If they're getting more at-bats, you can usually read into that. It's they want to get a long look at this player, and so they will give that player more at-bats, more opportunities than others. If they're not playing a lot, that says something. And in this case, they have run him out in center field like he's the center fielder. Now, we're a week into March. That could change. Miles Straw hasn't been able to get on the field as much as I think they want. So that plays into it, too. They just didn't have anybody else to play in that group. But I read beyond that. In this case, this goes beyond their words, and I'm going to read into their actions. And they're treating him like this is a guy that could go win that center field job and play the majority of the time in center field. Vogt said recently, yeah, they like the versatility and he could be a super sub for them. And I think there's a possibility where there's a scenario where that works. But they are not shying away from the fact that they think this guy can go play center field for them. And it's gone from a week and a half of, that seems totally crazy to, no, I see this scenario where this guy's playing in center field. And it also says to me, they want to give him the opportunities. They don't want him to get away because they didn't give him the chances. They believe that bat is enough to carry whatever position he is at, and he needs the chances to go do that. And so to me, am I reading too much into the fact that they're putting him out there in center field? They want to give him chances and fly balls in game scenarios so he feels comfortable in center field. And I think they're doing that because they think he could be their center fielder.
It's interesting that he's played center and he hasn't played the corners, only because Straw's going to be a center fielder. You know, you're not going to see Miles Straw in right field. So if Freeman even starts 3-4 days a week in center, Florial fits into this somehow. They traded Cody Morris for him. He's out of options. He deserves one extended look, I think, just given the tools. And the fact that he hasn't really had that before in the majors. So it makes you wonder, like, if this could be Freeman part of the time in center, Florial part of the time in center, and Straw really is just limited to that defensive replacement pinch runner role. And the benefit for Freeman is you could start him in center 3-4 days a week. You could start him at shortstop once or twice a week, third base once a week. There is a lot of value there. And if he hits, it's great. And if he doesn't hit, then you don't need to do that. Like, this is just because you believe in the bat and you want to get that bat in the lineup as much as you can. So the bat has, I mean, he's looked good. He's hitting the ball harder, I think. It's so hard to tell this stuff in spring training because so much of what they're evaluating is honestly like the swing mechanics, and it's so many steps removed from that stat line we see with the small sample size. But what do we always say? Follow what they do, not what they say. And the fact that he's playing center field so much tells you that they really want to get his bat in there. So
yeah,
it's crazy how quick it's happened, right? Like, remember the Ahmed Rosario thing. He didn't even go to center field until like mid-March. It felt so unfair that he was starting in the outfield when they delayed that decision so long. So at least they've had the foresight here. And Freeman was working in the outfield over the winter. So it's not a surprise that he seems comfortable out there. But they've done a good job of, you know, it's the point of spring training is to experiment like this. And to this point, the experiment's working.
It's like they're removing one of the last roadblocks in place that if he hits, there will be nothing standing in the way of finding him a spot. Everybody else you could do that with, whether it was Floreal or any of the outfielders. Of course, there's a natural built-in spot for them. But for Freeman, if he hit and he wasn't playing the outfield, well, he wasn't going to knock Jimenez out of his starting spot on one side of the infield, most likely at second base. I don't think they're going to make Freeman the everyday shortstop. So where was he going to – he's not going to find him at third base. He's not going to find him at first base. So where was he going to find his ways into the lineup? It was natural to go play center field. I mean, we talked about it last year. I thought maybe he just wasn't comfortable enough for them to ever pursue that for whatever reason. They talked about it, but they never did it. But for every chance he's had out there, I said it in our last show, it's not that he looks like he's always been out there, but it looks like the athletic gifts that he has – can carry him 90% of the way, and I think you can just refine that final 10%. You can get there. But if you're in position to go make the plays, and it just looks a little bit clunky towards the end, I think you can get that ironed out. But the most important thing, are you hitting? Because if you're doing that, your bat's going to be in the lineup. It really is that simple for this team.
Yeah, you're going to have to make sacrifices to get more offense in the lineup, and you can counteract those sacrifices by having Straw available to take over in center field in the late innings. It doesn't have to be every day because you do need to get a read on Floreal. And there are still questions about even how right field will shake out. Is it Laureano and Brennan? Is there space for Floreal to fit in over there so that he and Freeman can start some days? There's a lot of bodies out there, and I don't know the exact combination that they need to unlock. But Freeman in center field makes sense if he's hitting. And that's how you get a better read to where maybe Arias starts at shortstop, Brocchio's at AAA. Maybe both are underwhelming the first couple months. And Freeman's scorching the ball and he's playing center field. And you can play him more at shortstop. Vogt has unsurprisingly said that where we'll say, you guys have holes and you have all these question marks, he says they have depth and they have flexibility. And it's manager speak, of course.
Bravo. Bravo. Yeah, he's already got it.
It's manager spin, of course. But they do have alternatives. They have contingencies built in. And not to repeat ourselves over and over, but Freeman in center field a few times a week at least gives you a built-in contingency if he hits. Because then you can play him anywhere and you can figure out then where else do you need to fill a spot.
What do I need to work on? Well, you know, I work too hard. I care too much. Yes. Anytime you can turn those negatives into a positive, you got to go ahead and do it. And if you have Any storylines so far that have impressed you, if it's Tyler Freeman or somebody else, if you're on YouTube, drop them into the comments down there. Give us a like. Help out. Of course, we thank everybody for listening at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere else. And, of course, come join the Discord by joining the Patreon at patreon.com/SelbyIsGodcast and share your thoughts in the Discord.
All right, I'm going to stay in the outfield. I'm going to go one William Brennan. And it's very trite to talk about mechanical tweak, a new pitch, a new batting stance. This guy put on 10 pounds of muscle. This guy slimmed down with going to Orange Theory classes. And by May, you've forgotten everything they did in the offseason, and you've got your narrative based on their stat line. But I'm going to do that. Will Brennan, you can see the stance looks different. I told him it almost reminded me of like Michael Brantley. Just kind of like unassuming, the bat's kind of by his shoulder, and it's just go. There's not like a ton of moving parts and levers all over the place. He said that was high honors, and he said he's just trying to be more consistent. That's how you stick. But the reason behind it, it's very easy to solve, not easy to solve, but easy to understand what didn't work for him. Because he has this elite contact ability, right? He's making contact on any pitch. That's a problem. It's a problem because he chased almost as much as anybody. So if you're swinging at everything and you're making contact on everything, you are making a lot of weak contact. That is a very simple formula. So how do you counteract that? A couple ways. One, it's swing decisions. It's just having better patience, not chasing everything. But why are you chasing everything? I mean, he was not able to hit fastballs up in the zone. That's part of the reason for the altered swing mechanics. And, you know, there's just a lot of like, it's kind of like what makes a pitcher good is when you can get guys to chase on the pitches you want, where you're throwing a fastball in the zone and maybe they take it, strike one. And then you're tunneling a curveball off of that. And they're swinging at that because they think it's a fastball. Right? So with Brennan, he needs to make better contact. And I think the thing that this organization is grappling with is it's not as simple as, hey, Kwan and Brennan and Freeman and Straw, like these guys who just, you know, they're not 6'4", 250 pounds. You can't just say, hey, go put on 10 pounds of muscle and you'll hit the ball harder and everything will be great. So you do want to be strong, but if you're hitting the pitches that you want to be hitting, you're going to make better contact. These guys can all hit home runs. They can all hit doubles. They can all hit hard line drives. It's just getting the pitch you need to get. So with Brennan's stance, he says, like, he doesn't need to have, I don't need to make some big hip move. I'm strong enough where I just have momentum. So he said his old stance, he was using his entire body. Everything's moving all over the place just to create momentum so that he can hit the ball hard. But you don't need to do that if you're hitting the right pitches. So it's Valleca said it's more compact, it's simpler, he's more connected, and that will all allow him to get to pitches up in the zone. And if he can just have better pitch recognition and swing decisions, you know, maybe it'll fuel a better hitter in 2024. And keep in mind, not that minor league stats are everything, and it's not about the stats necessarily, but this guy had the skill set to thrive in the minors. We've seen stretches of him thriving in the majors. You know, that crazy low walk rate, like that is the clear indicator right there that he needs to make better swing decisions, and a lot of that will just snowball. So I don't know what that means. You know, I think him and Laureano in right field is a pretty sensible platoon to start out the season. And then it's one of those where it's like, let, you know, play Hunger Games. Whoever performs, let them get more playing time. But I think he can be better than he showed last year. And he's going to have to, because, you know, if it's Freeman, if it's Floreal, if it's Chase DeLauder, if it's one of those power hitters, at AAA, who's on the 40-man, like there aren't a lot of like slam dunk answers, but there are a lot of guys who are positioning themselves to earn playing time in the outfield. So it is sink or swim for him.
What did he have? A month stretch where he was, if he wasn't the best hitter on the team, he was the second best hitter on the team. And he was on fire. And then, of course, that didn't play out in the second half. The batting stance, it is something that can mean something. It can mean also absolutely nothing. But what I find fascinating about it, and I didn't realize until semi-recently, I heard somebody discussing this at some point, a former player, because I was looking at, I don't remember if it might have been Tomy, somebody I was examining their early stance in their career, not on purpose, but I just noticed it, and then I remembered what they looked like later in their career. Even Jose Ramirez isn't set up the same way when you really saw him blossom in 16 the way that he looks now. And I'm thinking, well, is it a result of mechanic changes? Is it, you know, what fuels a batting stance to change over time? And then I heard someone talk about how it's not really something that you set and forget. It is always a constant adjustment because pitchers are always adjusting to you. If you make a change in your stance because I need to be better, let's say, at hitting higher fastballs, so I need to get in a position to be able to hit the higher fastballs, and then you prove you can do that, well, what is a pitcher going to do? Stop giving you higher fastballs because you're proving you can do that, right? And so then you start to shift, and maybe they start throwing you lower down in the zone. And because your stance is what it is, you've now become vulnerable because you've been concentrating so much at being in a position to hit something high that now you need to make a subtle adjustment to hit the low. Then they're going to adjust off of that. And so it's always a constant fluid thing. No one ever figures out their batting stance. There's no end game here to the batting stance. It's always going to be a constant adjustment of how are they pitching me? How are they attacking me? And then how do I be in the best position to attack them back based on what they're doing to me? And I found that fascinating. Something that once you hear it, you go, well, duh. But I never thought about why that would be the case.
It's so funny you mentioned that. I had that epiphany like 10 days ago because I was going around the room asking everyone what stance they imitated when they were a kid. And Sandy Alomar, first of all, he says millions of them. He said it was like Baskin-Robbins style with 31 flavors. But he was, what I didn't realize is he said, it didn't stop when he was a kid. He was doing it in the majors. He said in the 97 season, he used Mark McGuire-like stance. And when I started envisioning it, I was like, you know what? Like, there are elements of that. And he said he just needed something where, like, his hands would just be so relaxed. And it was just as simple as, like he, multiple people describe McGuire's swing as just violence. And like you're just ambushing any pitch that comes at you. But when you think about it, I mean, I can see the resemblance there. And he said he didn't use that previously. He said when he was coming up in the minors, he would emulate Jose Canseco's stance. And it's just weird to think, because I'm like, well, the stance you've had since you were 15 years old, like maybe some hitting coaches along the way make some tweaks, but your stance is your stance. And Sandy's out here saying that every year he had something new. It just copied off of a teammate or an opponent.
I would imagine there's also elements of if you're not feeling, like if you have a subtle injury that maybe you're not even discussing or disclosing, but you're not as quick as you need to be, and so maybe you make a subtle adjustment to your hands. And that's how guys get into bad habits, right? We saw that with Jose Ramirez. I think we've seen him get into some bad habits, maybe overcompensating for something that's bothering him physically. It's fascinating, a constant cat and mouse game of pitchers and hitters. We mentioned Martinez. I guess I'll go with Angel Martinez now. And again, this goes beyond the fact that he's got a 1.118, not OPS, slugging percentage. Slugging percentage. That OPS is actually 1644.
So if he carries a 1644 OPS through 162 games this year, will the Guardians offense be middle of the pack?
Greatest season of all time. Two home runs, two doubles, a triple. among the 9 hits that he has. But it's also a semi-related to what I said with Freeman. How it's not about the numbers per se. It is how is the team treating that player? And Martinez has gone from someone that I know some have mentioned him as being one of their better prospects. We've seen him maybe even get into the bottom of some top 100 lists. But I have yet to, in my own mind, elevate him to the status of some of the others. That's probably just a mistake on my part. But Martinez has been handled like a top prospect. I think, at least from the outside, he looks like the team is handling him like one of their top prospects. And I think based on what we're seeing, this kind of goes back to the giving a guy a lot of chances because they like him and they want to see where this goes. And to me, that kind of seems like what they're doing with Martinez. They're moving him around a little bit, but they're looking for reasons to get his bat in there. And we know he's made some changes himself to try to unlock some more of that power and to see it play out so far in spring. I'm encouraged by the numbers. The fact that, like, I looked at the opponent quality is 7.6 right now at Baseball Reference, which is the equivalent of a pitcher between AA and AAA. Like, I'm glad that he's having the success. It's better than the alternative of having no success. But it's how the team is handling him and the fact that they really look like they're sprinting to get his name into the lineup most days and to give him the at-bats and the plate appearances. To me, that speaks volumes to what they think of him. And now he's gone from someone that, yeah, I think he's good. Maybe he gets onto the radar. No, he's now planted firmly on the radar for me. And he looks like a guy that could potentially emerge as a candidate this year if nobody else is seizing one of those middle infield spots.
Yeah, there's still an order of operations to get to him in that competition, but so much can change in a year. And like, remember, Bo Naylor had a miserable season in 2021, and I think people were writing him off. And the next thing you know, he's in the majors in 2022. So there are reasons for a bad season. I mean, Nolan Jones had a rough season. The next year he's in the majors, and the year after that he's fourth in the Rookie of the Year race. Like, it's a lot can change. And Martinez just turned 22. The organization was fawning over him a year ago. Just because he has a pedestrian season doesn't mean he's completely off the radar. So I think we draw conclusions on guys way too quick. Sometimes when they're in the minors, sometimes when they're in the majors, you have to let them develop because you never know when they're going to develop. And just, we don't know how they're going to develop, let alone, like, the front office doesn't even know. So it's, you just have to let this stuff play out organically sometimes. And I do wonder, just being the age he is, having this little flash of success, that could carry you through a minor. Like, if he spends the year in Columbus, having been the talk of spring training, maybe that leads to just a year where he thrives. And then they're like, okay, well, the notice is out. Arias, Rocchio, Freeman, Tana, maybe even Brito. You've got this year because Angel Martinez is coming. And, like, that would be a good problem to have. Or all these guys trade values. Like, that never hurts either. So it's...
No. They're not trading any middle infielders ever because it's written down like, play like a champion today. It's never trade a shortstop today.
It is insane.
Don't make me tap the sign.
In the course of 2.5 years, 3 years, the only middle infielder they've moved is Owen Miller. I mean, they did this to themselves. But yeah, he's looked good.
Does Richie Palacios count because he's now back at second base potentially? They moved on from him.
Sure.
All right, never mind.
I mean, it's like, what is that Columbus lineup going to look like? You have Martinez at third, Tana at short, Brito at second, Rocchio managing? Like, what are you going to do there? Daniel Schneeman playing everywhere? Ray Delgado. That's a lot of bodies for one team.
Don't just read the spring breakout roster. We'll talk about that coming up.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope. Because
I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, let's talk pitching. I'm going to go Joey Cantillo. And this is going to be more broad because he's made, I think, two appearances, and he's looked good. But to me, it's more so talking to him and getting a sense of how much more confidence you have in your second big league camp. This is very similar to Logan Allen, where Cantillo, he had never really struggled in the minors. It was more so just staying healthy. And then he got to AAA. And he had been incredible at limiting home runs throughout his minor league career. Got to AAA and allowed 16 of them in 95 innings. So he talked about some issues with just consistency and getting ahead in the count and even some pitch tipping. But I remember talking to Logan Allen about how struggling at AAA was actually beneficial. Because you sort of get a reality check where everything is so easy for you. You get to the majors, you think it's going to be the same. It's not. It never is. So having that reality check in AAA allows you to sort of reset and fine-tune some things before you get to the majors. Logan Allen had a great rookie season. Cantillo, you know, it's. I don't know that it's going to be as seamless. He also doesn't have an open path to the rotation right now. But I think just knowing if he could be the pitcher that you hoped he could, and him throwing his fastball in the mid-90s makes such a difference to play with that changeup. That's really good. He's got the curveball. Just knowing you have someone with a higher ceiling, because like they have their depth is Curry and Gattis and maybe Lively, and it's a lot of guys who are just, you feel more comfortable if they're spot starters, I think. Cantillo could be better than that. So just knowing that he's there, and that legitimately he should be ready at some point this season, I think that would be a really important development.
He's got some, I won't say star level potential, because I think that's putting maybe too much on him, but his ceiling, there's some ceiling there that I can't wait to see him chase at the major league level. This is not... There are certain pitchers that just excel, and it's kind of inexplicable. Maybe they don't have great stuff, but then they get the numbers, and you're thinking, okay, this is somebody that could step in at some point and maybe be a spot starter or something. No, Cantillo looks like the kind of guy that I want to find innings for him. And I think there's a difference between I'll go to him if I need to, and I am seeking out opportunities for this guy to eventually get to the major league level. And that's kind of where I feel with Cantillo. I'm eagerly seeking out those innings. I don't know where they're going to come from. And I'm not saying you have to do it day one, but when as this season unfolds, and if he's having the success in the minor leagues that he should have, then I'm going to be like, okay, is there middle innings here that he could help in? Is there even short spurts? Is there any way that this guy could help me win games in 24? And I think that kind of what separates him from just your average, this guy's going to be an innings eater for me. I'll stick with pitching This one's a little bit unconventional because it really has nothing to do with something, oh, that's surprising, or this is a young player that we didn't really know. Tristan McKenzie, the fact that he made it back into a game,
I like
pitched his two innings. Big things for him. See, big things. Pitched his two innings, had a couple of strikeouts, felt good after the outing. That's the most important thing, and he's going to be in line to make his next outing, his next start. We don't sleep on McKenzie from the standpoint of his talent, but I think it's easy to forget how good he is and what he can mean if he's in this rotation. Now, we've talked about this before, so again, we're not sleeping on it necessarily on this show, but it's not talked about enough what a healthy-ish McKenzie could mean for this rotation, because he takes you from, if everybody else is doing what we think that they can, that's four guys, but if you add that fifth one where you never have a day where you feel like, we just got to escape today. We just got to hope the bullpen holds up. Every day you have an opportunity for somebody in this rotation to go out and pitch like a number one on any given day. Now, when you're talking about young guys, there's a lot of variables there, but there's a chance for that to be in place. And McKenzie, my God, he raises the floor immensely by just his presence being in this rotation. Then you can have a semi-anemic offense and still compete for this division if you have a rotation with McKenzie in it doing the things we think they're capable of. And so just health for him. Health, feeling good, being ready for his next start, bouncing back. Those are the storylines that I think are very important for this rotation. And it's not going to get talked about necessarily beyond this because we don't know until he just goes out and keeps pitching. But I'm just encouraged. I'm happy that he's out there pitching again. And let's see where this takes him.
I think on our last podcast, I said their win total spectrum is somewhere like 72 to 94. You spit out your coffee at that. But McKenzie is the embodiment of why I believe that. Where he in 2022, he was an ace. And in 2023, he didn't pitch. So it's, how am I supposed to predict his 2024? It's honestly, it's like the least exciting thing about baseball is that health factors in so much. Depth is so important. And it's impossible to predict. So I don't know. Like, that's why I stopped. I used to do predictions for every team and write haikus. And then I realized how pointless it was because even though the haikus were incredible, the predictions were terrible because you're just banking on things you've absolutely no idea if they're going to happen. I know McKenzie's skill level. I'm confident if he makes 30 starts, he's going to be a really good pitcher. But I have no way of knowing if he's going to make 30 starts.
That's the downside of both him and Bieber. It's you can never just say, like you can with talent, with a young player, and they just, no one ever really figures it out. It's always a constant adjustment. But when they do reach that level, you just pencil them in. There's the stat line. That's what I believe he is. But with health, there's never a line that you cross and you say, aha, we're safe. Like, a guy could go out and throw seven shutout innings and the next day say, my elbow's barking. That's the reality of pitching.
All right, I think we saved the best conversation for last. What if I told you Cleveland, this wasteland of failed first round outfield draft picks, haven't been able to develop a homegrown drafted all-star outfielder since Manny Ramirez, who they took in 1991. What if I told you that Cleveland had a homegrown drafted first round outfielder who was slashing .455, .539, .818 with multiple extra base hits this spring? With almost as many walks as strikeouts this spring.
People are saying his swing looks like Mike Trout. People are saying that.
Could Chase DeLauder be on the opening day roster?
What?
What would you put the odds at?
Could he?
80%? 60%?
80% seems low. Can you go higher than 100? 110%. I don't think there's a chance in hell that he's on the opening day roster.
There you go. Aggregate TJ. Do it. Guardians analyst says there's no chance in hell.
Manzardo, oh, it's too cold. The Lauder, it's just fine.
Yeah, I mean, he's played six games at AA. Now, those six games went well. They did.
Project that forward.
I mean, he played in the fall league because he needed more reps. He was injured. There's no nitpicking of what he accomplished last year. I know there are questions about how his swing will translate, whether it'll leave him susceptible against big league pitching. Okay. It's hard for me as a novice to not think that he's going to be a really good major league hitter. And the question is when. I've said all winter, like, I think there's a path for him to debut in 2024. I think it's more going to have to do with the guys on the roster than him. You know, I don't know if he'll start in Akron or Columbus. I would guess Akron. And then if he thrives for a month, bump him up. But can they, like, they need answers on all those guys we mentioned before. And I think DeLauder will be better than all of them eventually, but I think it would behoove them to figure out if Freeman can actually hit. Figure out if Floreal is someone. Because imagine if he is. Imagine if you have a dude you can stick in center field who can hit 30 home runs, steal 20 bases. You know, can Brennan be the Brennan you hoped he could be? You got to get those answers now. And you got to get those answers while DeLauder is finishing up his development. Because at the latest, DeLauder's up here next year. And I think the hope would be he sticks forever. So I think you got to, it's a nice little tease this spring. The home run he hit at Goodyear Ballpark went over that metal roof on the right field plaza. I think it landed in the base of the White Tank Mountains. So it's fun to watch. Really polished, smart kid. I don't know. There's a lot to like.
Sometimes a guy can just show you that he doesn't look like he's far away. And he doesn't. He doesn't look like he's far away. You put him on the field and he looks very much in place. Now, that's about 0.00001% of this equation of whether a guy fits and whether he's going to have any success. But again, this is early in spring training. You're looking for any signs you can. And in this case, he looks like he belongs on that field with any other major leaguer. Paint me the scenario where he's up here. Can you just look into a crystal ball, pull out one of those scenarios and tell me he's making his debut in 24? How did it happen?
Floreal's a bust, and Freeman either doesn't hit enough or winds up on the infield. And then that paves the way for center field. Or the Brennan Laureano thing doesn't work, and it really just has to be one of them. It's hard. DeLauder's never not hit. It's a very limited sample. And it's the minors and it's college. But who is projecting him to have a 700 OPS in Columbus this year? Nobody. There's no evidence of that. And he just looks the part. So I'm just assuming he's going to force their hand at some point. Because I have no other information telling me he won't.
I was just trying to quickly pull up the projections. Best one is Zips. It has him at 90, a 90 WRC plus.
We rightfully criticize this lineup. We rightfully criticize the fact that they haven't traded from the shortstop clutter, that they didn't make moves to address the outfield, that they traded away outfielders who could have helped them. You can see the vision, though. You plug in Manzardo at first base DH, you plug in DeLauder in the outfield, and if those guys reach expectations, the lineup looks a hell of a lot different, doesn't it? And I don't know that that matters for 2024, but my opinion, I can see the way that this is a good offense in 2025. Bo Naylor, another year under his belt. You know, you're talking an outfield of Kwan, DeLauder, and whoever sticks. You're talking an infield that if you get an answer at shortstop, maybe or maybe it's Brito, then everything is solved. Like I see the path here. It's just there were also opportunities to either expedite the path there or supplement what you already have with more pieces. So I don't know. It just depends on how much patience you have, I guess.
I see that you're finally on board with the front office way of thinking here. Never bet on one player. Just have 17 different alternatives, and you just need one of them to pop. In the outfield, you just need one of them to pop. Never mind the fact that in doing so, you could let some other guys get away because you got to make decisions on them too quickly. Or you put a lot of effort and energy into getting a guy to be good, and then you just let him walk away to Cincinnati, and he ends up playing a pretty big role for them in 23.
Can I say something crazy?
But if you look at the positives, you look at the positives like the way Vogt was, you say this is just creating opportunities. It's just creating opportunities. Yeah, what do you got to say?
I almost wonder if whenever they swing the big trade, and I'm talking, could be this year, could be next year. Because I think the team is situated pretty well for like 25, 26, 27. And you never know. I almost wonder if the big trade is to get a starting pitcher eventually. I'm assuming Bieber's going to walk. I never know about McKenzie's health. And I think they have more answers. I mean, look at their top prospects list. Like, it's a lot of position players at the top. It's guys who are on the doorstep. I don't know. I think you can get, this year it is critical to get an answer at shortstop and to find something that works in the outfield, whether it's Freeman, Florial, Brennan, whatever.
One guy. Yeah, it'll feel like a success if you find your shortstop and your one guy in the outfield that looks good.
Because then you add Manzardo and DeLauder, and I know like no prospect is a given, but it just looks so much more formidable.
Speaking of prospects, we'll get a look at some of them in the spring breakout game, which is coming up March 16th, 7:05. But the roster has been released. Alex Clemmy, Jackson Humphreys, Parker Messick, Andrew Walters, Will Dion, Justin Campbell, Doug Nikhazy, Ryan Webb. Those are your pitchers. The catchers, Cody Huff, Cooper Engel, Brian Lavastida. Your infielders, Kyle Manzardo, Angel Henao, Khalil Watson, Jose Devers, Alex Mooney, Rafael Ramirez, KJ Kaifas. And in the outfield, DeLauder, Chorio, Halpin, Fox, and Lampe. I love the idea. I can't wait to see what this is and what it becomes in the future, because I think this is something that they should definitely continue.
I agree. The Futures game is great. I wish they did more to promote it, put it on a national platform, but this is a nice little addition as well.
You'll be back in attendance for that, right?
Do you want me to just give play-by-play since it's not broadcast?
It will be on ClevelandGuardians.com. The audio-only version will be there. But finding the video of it, yeah, it's disappointing. I wish, like, that would be great, a great thing for Bally's to air and just make it available. It doesn't even have to be, you know, just a big overhead shot with the audio. I'd watch that. It doesn't have to be the full broadcast if you don't want to, but why not? Why not full broadcast? There's Everything in spring training, especially by the time you're getting to March 16th, is the same. Why not cover something different? Be awesome.
The dog days of March, they're upon us.
That's right. You get your little break now, and you'll be back out there tearing it up, looking for answers.
I have nothing to say to that. I'm just imagining stalking Mike Chernoff and Chris Antonetti at the Chili's or the Applebee's or the Panda.